Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
And gentlemen, let's get ready to be inspired! Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, time to get in the game.
And good morning once again. This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week of American Tennis. I am speaking today, and I have on the line Coach Eric Hayes. I think you're on the line, aren't you, Coach? You're trying to catch a plane down there. Are you on the line?
I am, Coach. How you doing?
I want to introduce you right away because right out of the blocks, I know you got to catch a plane, and I want to do as much as we can, but if you could just hang in there, and got to get through a few introductions here. But, folks, this is the American Tennis Program on the UR Tennis Network, and we remind you that our mission each and every week is to stand up and to speak out and say those things you need to say. Look, folks, we have a duty to do this. It is our right to speak up and say what we need to say, but we have a duty to say it. We just always ask you to address issues, not people. Stay professional, and nobody can find fault. I remind you, Edmund Burke always said that his most famous quote is that all that it takes for evil to prosper is for good people to do nothing. We need you to stand up and to speak out. Remember that Edmund Burke, sort of the new slang on that, is that a squeaky wheel will always get the grease, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. And, Eric, we've got to find that balance here today because we're going to talk about so many things that are going on in tennis. I've called it the Civil War of American tennis. We've got problems with the 10 and under tennis. And I hate to say, people don't like that not politically correct to say controversy with, 10 and under tennis. Junior tennis, of course, there's issues there. But college tennis this last week is just unbelievable what is going on. I want to just give a few quick things about Eric Hayes. And, Eric, I think the best thing I could say to you out of the blocks, and, I don't want you to squirt a few tears here, before you get on the plane or something. But, folks, there are few coaches that I have ever been around my 42 years that I love more. And I really, from the bottom of my heart, seen him come up from the time that he was 9 years old all through the ranks to where what he does now. There's few people that I respect more for the man that he is. And when push comes to shove, Eric Hayes is a man you always want in your foxhole. So I mean that, Eric.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. I want to go through just your quick list, and then I want to get you talking here before you got to catch your plane. Played college tennis at the cradle of coaches, Carson Newman in Jefferson City, Tennessee. Miami of Ohio, Carson Newman, probably in the eastern part of the United States, are known for turning out more coaches than anybody else. Of course, you were a great junior coach, and then I was fortunate enough to have you as an assistant at Clemson when we had a great top 10 team there. You went on to coach at Kansas, winning three Big Eight championships at that time in your coaching. You were hired to University of South Florida, where you coached for a while, and then you were hired privately by Brian Dunn in the USTA. But, I mean, here started your professional coaching, where you coached players like Brian Dunn, Jared Palmer. And who were some of the others, Eric, real quick, I could throw out there?
Canadian Helen Kelsey, Daniel Nestor, Kareem Alami. It was out of the Palmer Tennis Academy. I was the director of pro players, so we trained them and traveled with them, and we had about 15, 20 year-round.
And, of course, Richard Matuszewski, who's so dear to my heart. I still say that Richard was number one as far as, you know, one absolutely probably my favorite, because he started so low, number 10 in the East junior rankings, not even making Kalamazoo. He makes a round. You coach him to the final 16 in 1996, where he lost to Stefan Edberg in a round of 16. And Richard made it, I think, 47 in the world. So you came back into college coaching, Eric, coaching at NC State, Troy State, and now you're at Mercer and in the Southern Conference, which is pretty darn exciting. You also put on a yearly $50,000 professional event. So there's not much you haven't done. Did I leave anything out there, Eric?
Well, Coach, you're flattering, and I appreciate it. But, you know, I wouldn't have gotten in this profession, you know, if it wasn't for growing up in Clemson and being in your tennis excellence program and watching you with Mark Dixon, Beekler, Gandolfo, all those guys, you know, just at a young age wanted to go into coaching. And, you know, love you to death. You've been my mentor and the reason I got into this.
Thanks, Eric. Okay. We're surely on – I can't tell you what it means to me, man. I need to give you a chest butt. But, you know, the thing is, I ask you on today, you're a new coach in the Southern Conference, and we've got a lot of discourse. Would you say we've got some discourse in tennis, not in the Southern Conference, but tennis in 10 and under ranks, junior ranks, and the college ranks like I alluded to when I started out? What's your take on what's going on in tennis right now in the country?
Well, I think the major issue is what we're doing with player development. At every level, it's changed. You know, back in the 80s, you know, junior, college, they were playing matches, playing tournaments. They weren't scared to compete. They weren't working, taking 3-4 private lessons a week. They were out there competing in tournaments every weekend. Same thing with college. I mean, our kids were making good grades, and we were playing more than 25 matches. And you know, now it's to the point where we're not able to put these players, whether they're college juniors, under the gun, under pressure. We can't duplicate pressure in practice like you can under the heater of a match, and that's why we're behind other countries big time. Is because, especially, you know, working, I've had this challenger now for the last 12 years, and, you know, we've had players and coaches and trainers from all over the world come to a top 100 players. And there's a vast difference in the way countries like Spain, Brazil, Belgium train their players, even at the pro level, compared to how we do here in the States across the board.
Give some examples. What are your, you know, just some examples off the top of your head?
Well, I mean, I'll give you a personal example, and it's fine for me to use his name. We're best friends. He knows we've talked about this, but in 92, you know, I was the men's coach at University of South Florida, and There was a boy there named Brian Dunn who was number one in the world, and I was working with him some, but I was approached by the USTA to coach him in conjunction with them. And, you know, he was hot. He signed a $1 million contract with ASICS and Pro Kennets and was offered a lot of wild cards to master-level tournaments, $500,000 tournaments, and we took every one up. We went all over the world, and, I mean, at one point he was 0-15 in a matter of about 3 or 4 months. And one of his good friends was a guy named Vince Spadia, who, you know, they were very similar in juniors, ranked similarly ITF worldwide. Well, Vince, you know, was stuck down there in Florida, scrapping on the satellites, playing futures, grinding out on dirt. And if you look at both their careers and where they went, you know, Vince had a pretty darn successful career. And, you know, I felt like with Brian, we made a mistake in rushing the process, and we skipped a big step in his development because he could have been a legit top 10 player. He could have been Isner back then. He was 6'9", big serve, but we messed up.
Well, that's, you know, pretty powerful you talk about this, you know, looking back, and most of us remember Brian and you know, everybody talks about the potential. I had this talk recently with some coaches up at Kalamazoo, and we talked about the microwave cooking versus the slow, long process, that comfort bears no fruit. When I did a seminar recently with kids and, you know, in a camp, and I told them, if you show talent, you are the ones that we're going to be hardest on. And I think maybe we do the reverse. Maybe we baby the most talented kids. And, you know, I think of it over and over. We've got some top juniors now. Junior tennis in USA looks good. Two finalists at Wimbledon. I mean, you got Jack Sock. You just had the same player, Adam, just won Kalamazoo.
Oh, do you think we should know that? Slipped my mind.
Yep.
I wasn't up there
no,
this
no,
year.
No. Yep. Anyhow, he just won Kalamazoo, and he won Wimbledon as well. And, you know, I really apologize. That's the top of my tongue here. But, you know, the bottom line on the thing is that we are showing some great progress with developing players, but here's what we do wrong. We take the players and the talent that is showing, and we shine it up instead of putting it on the back burner and trying to make it work more. I mean, some of these youngsters, we need to give them 6 months to a year of tough, tough training. And then, you know, bring them forward after that, you know, after that 6 months or year, you know. Is this something that we're doing by design wrong, or do you just think that everybody gets caught up in the hype, Eric?
I really think everyone's getting caught up in the hype a little bit. I mean, I feel like I was actually at a camp, and one of your former players, an animal, Lawson Duncan, was there, and we sat down for hours and talked, and it's just like we skipped a decade. You know, we went from the late 80s, early 90s to where, you know, we're pumping out players, training players, and there was just a gap there. And, you know, I also feel like the private sector, and believe me, there's great coaches out there and all, but a lot of our players coming up through the private sector, coming up through the clubs and this and that, have they've missed the beat a little bit because they're not tested. And I know it's a livelihood for coaches, and you need to give those lessons and this and that, but we're just missing the toughening of these young athletes. And I've seen a coach, being down in Troy, where it's a very rural area, you know, all those kids play, there's not a lot of money. And of course, they don't play tennis. They play football, basketball, and, you know, they rough it out. And we've got to find a way to get back to that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's Noah Rubin, and I apologize to Noah Rubin. I've been on the road about 3,500 miles here, and but Noah Rubin is our top guy right now, and he won, you know, pretty convincingly all the way through the matches. And you know, when I watched him play up there, he is tough though, Eric. This guy, he constructs points. He can stay on the baseline. He handles tempo.
better than just about anybody. You know, I've seen he just basically his line of scrimmage, you know, and all coaches know about the line of scrimmage or into paint basketball, but it's basically better than the other kids. He is really a tough kid. And a lot of the players, like you say, their ball striking is good. They show a lot of promise, but we do the same thing over and over again. We basically try to bring them along too quick. I've argued, Eric, that we don't need more systems. We need incentives. You know, we need incentives. We need to just put kids out there and say, go get it more. And we're just too clever or too cute or, you know, we've got too many computers. We figure out too many ways of doing things. But it's basic, isn't it? What are your thoughts?
Well, I agree 100%. And I'll be the first to tell you I'm guilty. I'm sitting here in the airport getting ready to fly down to Tampa to pick up my daughter and drive her up here for school at Mercer. And, you know, I spoiled her to her point. And I tell you, I'll give you an example. 3 years ago at my Challenger in Alabama, we have Bouchard, the Canadian girl, who, you know, had a great summer. And heck, I think she's top 10 right now. She was only, she was 17, 18, but, you know, there was a young Canadian coach there with her, and she lost first-round qualifying. And she was the first one in the morning the next day out there practicing. When the lights went out, she was the last one out there. And, I mean, just in a matter of 2-3 years, she went from losing in a 50 challenger qualifying to now being top 10. And I'm convinced it's the time she put in and the hard work that put her to that point. We talk a good game here a lot, but it's just a matter of getting hard work done. We've seen examples of that, Coach. My gosh, I've seen them. I mean, I've seen them. What motivated me to go into coaching is seeing guys like Matt Acheski and Kent Kinnear and all those guys come through Clemson that were overlooked by other people. And all it was hard work, and they had tremendous professional careers and great lives.
Yeah, you could work your way to the, you know, up the ladder, and then they went to style more than work. I think that, and I don't want to jump, about another couple minutes, I want to get to the college scene, but I want to set the table in talking about this because it is so critical that everybody understands that it is not about style and comfort. It's it is about putting the work in. Unless the kids put the work in, they never have ownership over their talent and over their skills, And I bet it was Cesar. Well, I bet the coach from Canada was Cesar, the young coach.
Exactly.
Okay. You know, do you know who brought him up? Robert Davis in Peru.
Wow.
And Cesar and his father, when they first came to Miami, they got on a Greyhound bus and traveled about 20 hours and, you know, and I remember meeting them, I saw the hunger. You know, you always say you've got to be hungrier than a starving dog looking at a meat truck, and he definitely was. Now he is one of the top coaches maybe in the world as far as developing juniors, Eric. So
And it's development. I mean, we're missing out on developing players just as a whole, and that's the gap. We're not mentally testing these kids. We're not physically pushing them. They are not developing like other countries. It's a fact.
Yeah, and it is our. There is a mentality here of people going after their pedigree now. It always happens with second or third generation kids. By the time, you know, the parents build up the business, second or third generation kids come in there, and they basically don't understand the work that it took to build. And then secondly, what they don't understand is that they will not have ownership. When you do not work hard for something, you basically will give away something because you don't understand, nor do you own the value of having done it. And so here we are, Eric, at a sort of a crossroads. Junior tennis, we are into style, and I'm going to just I get disgusted when I go to Kalamazoo and see kids playing a tiebreaker for the third set because some sports scientist or some psychologist, somebody that has not been a tennis player that does not understand that what we are doing kids never die on the tennis court, Eric. You get tired and you lose. Now, there's some instances where kids have pushed it too far, and they, you know, they have severe cramps and all these things happen. But my golly, are we're creating hothouse flowers instead of tough kids for the most part. But I've got to say now, I want to give this observation. Kalamazoo this year was maybe the best crop of kids I have seen in the past 10 to 15 years. Some of these kids were tough. Some of these kids were trained independently by their coaches. Noah Rubin, actually, Lawrence Krieger will be on the his coach will be on our show next week, American Tennis, talking about, you know, how he brought Noah along. But the point being, with these kids that have been coming up, the overall tendency by our infrastructured bureaucracy of top-down management is that we create systems, and the kids have to jump through hoop after hoop after hoop, 10 and unders, 12 and unders, 14 and unders, 16 and unders, 18 and unders. They have to go play these L1, L2, L3, L4, L5s. Now, where's the incentive? We've gone to this point system. There's not an incentive to for these kids to pick up the ball and run on their own. I mean, I really am disappointed. And your quick thoughts.
Well, I agree with you 100%. I mean, what's happened is we've mapped it out for them. We've laid the framework of everything out for these junior players, where they don't have to be inquisitive. They don't have to figure that. You know, they got to learn to make adjustments. They got to learn to make adjustments, make changes in their game. Someone's mostly there holding their hand, telling them what to do. And you hit it on the head with the tournament. I mean, look how it's changed. You know, with the U.S. system in the last couple of years, it's not rewarding the players that are just starting from the bottom and moving up. It's built against them. You know,
yeah, the kids have to go through the system, and by the time they go through one or two, three systems, the system takes them back, says, nope, you got to start over now in this next age group. Same thing, and parents spend the money to chase the points. And Tim Wilkerson was on J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis program on Tuesday about a month ago. And Tim Wilkerson said, Eric, that he played for two reasons, for rivalries and for important titles. In other words, the rivalries were, he said if somebody beat him, he might wait a year to try to get another crack at the person. But he always remembered, and this is why he competed. And the other was for important titles, like think of the Cracker Land. Think of, I don't care if it was a Clemson Fall Tennis Classic. Think of the Gator Bowl. Think of the Sugar Bowl. Think of the Copper Bowl. Think of, do you, I mean, I could give you this off the top of my head. Do you think somebody would want to be ranked number one in the country or to win Kalamazoo? Which one do you think, Eric? What's your
now
thought?
It would be to be number one in the country, I feel, now.
They would,
I mean,
because they're chasing.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Just back when I was playing, every tournament you just named there throughout the year, Crackerland, Qualifier in Belton, and, I mean, they were events that we geared our training towards, that we, I mean, that was at the top of the list. It's not like that now. You rarely, seldom hear these kids talk about that. I'll never forget the week before Belton. You're going to hate me for this, but you took Brad Huff and I out water skiing out in Lake Hartwell the week before, and about an 8-mile car ride out there. We had the best time of our life, and on the way back, you made us run back because we had too much fun. And I say that, I say that only because, as crazy as it sounds, that was development. Actually, Brad, I think that's the semis that year, but when would you ever see that again now? Never.
It's not. There's just too many regulations and, you know, rules, regulations never keep bad people from breaking rules. It only stimulates levels of deviance. But, You know, the thing is, we've got look. I don't want to be too negative today. We've got a lot of great things going on. I mean, Noah Rubin is the hottest player, and Lawrence Clegger is on next week. He's a fantastic developer of talent. He was a basketball player actually when he started out too. So I don't think he believes in too many Dr. Feelgood things. But I want to get to the college part of things here, Eric, a little bit. I know that your time's limited with us today, but you're now at Mercer, and we have a thing going on with college. You've seen for years, probably, I'm trying to think how many years you must have coached now, probably 25. You've probably been 25 years in the college coaching. Talk about what the ITA is trying to force forward or push forward, and then talk about, I can talk about what, you know, fantastic move we're making here in our own conference. But, you know, the stifling effect, another dumbing down effect for our sport.
Well, basically, you know, the ITA, the Intercollegiate Tennis Association, which is the coaching association, it's not the NCAA, is trying to force us as coaches and then all the different conferences to play a different format, a scoring format. Basically, one is, you know, going from regular scoring to sudden death. You know, when you get to deuce or three, all playing 1 point. And also, you know, with the scoring, and, you know, we went from back in the day playing 2 out of 3 sets and doubles to a pro set. Well, now they want to even make that shorter. And one thing that really, and also playing a tiebreaker for the third, not playing it out, and also doing what's called a clinch, which, of course, in, you know, college tennis, you play the doubles point, 3 matches, and if you win 2, the point's over, but you typically finish, so these players can develop and learn to finish matches, but now they're wanting us to stop right when the doubles point's over, even if it's a match point for your third team, and in singles, just stopping the match when someone reaches 4, therefore leaving players on the court, not finishing matches, not playing with the pressure of finishing matches, and, you know, they're doing this for numerous reasons. They say it's to shorten the match, to put it on television, you know, to get more people out there to watch. You know, it's I'm blown away by it. I'm very much against it. You know, we're in the Southern Conference now, which is a tremendous conference, a not only great athletic conference and one of the oldest, but a great academic conference, tremendous schools. And, you know, we had a conference call yesterday, and we voted unanimously to draft an opinion and a statement from the conference and the coaches that we're against this. And I believe we're the first conference to do that.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it was a unanimous vote, folks, that the Southern Conference is against the ITA. Let's put it this way. Southern Conference wants to play real tennis. They want to play tennis. They want to play the traditional scoring that we have used for over 100 years, and the one that's used by every country in the world, and why we continue to dumb down. You said the reasons they keep going back. Now, this is, folks, I didn't give Lisa Stone a plug earlier in her show earlier because I thought that we would get into this very extensively, and her show on Monday, though, if you will go back and listen to Lisa Stone's show, and we need to try to make sure that you talk this up. She had 5 college coaches on, and I was privileged enough to be on her show on Monday on the UR Tennis Network as well. But if you go to the UR Tennis Network and look at the Parenting Aces program on Monday, she really covered this in depth. And we did have a couple coaches that said they like no ad scoring and things like that. But the critical point that we kept reaching was number one, why are they doing this and why now? Okay, I want to answer that and see if Eric can answer that. Number two is, does the ITA is a coaching association. How do they have the power to do this without a two-thirds majority minimum of all the other coaches? How do they have the power to do this? And do they have the power with the NCAA? If they do, we've got a problem, because it's a lobbying group pretty much then running the show for all the conferences. And the number three, it's the way that they did it. I've never, ever seen something like this where they're basically, it's executive orders. I mean, they're basically just making executive orders that we're going to go to this format and you guys got to get used to it. And I can't stand people saying, oh, the train has left the station now. That train's left the station. You guys got to get used to this. Well, no, we don't. We're sticking up, folks, for much more than just, hey, listen, we think this format would be a little bit better than another one. So, Eric, from the outside, what do you think, first of all, why this and why now? What are your insights about why the ITA would do this now?
I think there's some other influences trying to influence the ITA to possibly go to shorter formats that honestly could filter down to junior tennis. That could
It will filter down.
And I'm telling you, before long, you know, this team tennis stuff, this format's going to possibly try to be filtered in. I mean, Coach, you hit it on the head. What other country or what other sport plays a different scoring format than what the rest of the countries do? Basketball, they keep score the same. I know there's different dimensions, but soccer, it's the same. Why would we? It's ridiculous. It blows my mind.
It makes you believe that there's something else involved other than. Now, here's the arguments they've given. Now, argument number one is because we have to, for TV. Well, first of all, TV will not cover this. The estimate is $40,000 to produce a tennis match on a college campus. If you spend $40,000, there's never any way you're going to operate in the black with that one. Number two, it's about, well, it's got to be less than 3 hours. This is what everybody wants, less than 3 hours. Well, this is a ruse. This is, you know, tennis is not a sport that's run by a clock. Tennis, you play until you're done. It's just like a baseball game. You've got to get to the ninth inning and finish the ball game. It's just like a golf tournament. You've got to finish the 18th hole. Tennis is not a sport that's run on time. It's one of the biggest elements. But the third thing, you know, is something that really perturbs me, and they say it's for excitement. And Eric, I've always argued that excitement runs every time you have excitement, the next occurrence excitement, it's only half as much. Excitement dwindles with each occurrence. It's like riding a roller coaster the first time, second time, third time, fourth time, fifth time, you're bored. Your excitement becomes boring if that's the truth. Drama, though, intensifies with each denial. The thing that makes tennis so exciting and so dramatic and so heart-wrenching is the, you know, I've always said it should be called first you have it, then you don't. You almost have it, then it's taken away. It's the drama of the long games, the match points saved. Will the person be able to serve out the match? It's the drama. So that just irritates me that these coaches that would support no ad scoring say it's about excitement. Give me a break.
Yeah.
That's just pathetic. It's pathetic.
And we got to remember who's coming to watch college tennis matches. People that love to watch tennis, retired professors that live around campus, parents, they love to watch tennis. I can't tell you how many people, even when the match is clinched, when it's 4-0 in the third, down to number six, they love to see the conclusion of a match. I can't tell you how many people have come up to me when we've had to stop and say, why are you stopping? They felt like they've been cheated. It's horrific.
Now, needless to say, the parents, needless to say, the kids, if they're up, it's taken them 3 hours to finally get up a break in the third set. Now, wait a minute, stop. I mean, it's just ludicrous. It is ludicrous.
It is. So, and what makes it worse, and you hit it on the head, coach, is I'm afraid to say it. I mean, it's getting rammed down our throats. Look at the votes by the coach. It was all against, and there's still some underlying factors forcing us or trying to force us to play this.
I want to make a big point here, and then I want to go in a little bit different direction here in a second. But, Eric, I was able to teach at leadership classes for 6 years at Clemson. You know, we used to teach a lot and stuff. But I remember the book that I used started out with this fact. There are three kinds of leadership. And see how pertinent this is to what we're experiencing. Number one, and the worst kind, is coercive leadership, where you are forced to do something. You are forced. It's a mandate to do something or else. You know, this is the way it is. Take it. The second was persuasive leadership, where, you know, somebody's riding the fence and you basically talk them into it, and you basically, hey, listen, it's the better of two alternatives, and let's go. Absolutely the best and the last was leadership, or following someone by choice. You follow someone by choice. Now, you tell me what you think is the most powerful of those three. Which one do you think?
The third, by choice.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And this is so pertinent to what we're experiencing with our civil wars of tennis. In the United States, the problem with bureaucracies or top-down management, they come up with a system and they have to use coercive or persuasive leadership. And now and then you'll get people by choice that follow. But this is a thing that I think we could really stress when we're looking at our organizations and people who are in charge. Anybody who's in charge needs to realize that you have got to be a leader to stand up and to speak out and to say those things, and then you need to give people the choice. And in the end, if you have to force them in compliancy, well, you know, you're going to have a reluctant follower, but basically leadership by choice is what the United States is made out of. You know, so where do we go from here, Eric? Where do we go from here? Just a normal person out here listening to the show today, the coach or the player or the parent. Where do we go? What should we do? What are your thoughts?
I tell you, you know, we have to make a statement, and there's a process this goes through. Just because the ITA is saying we have to do this, it's not set in stone. It has to be passed by an NCAA committee that meets in September. We need, if you have any interest in tennis or a child that plays college tennis or someone that might play college tennis, we need for written letters, emails, to go to people on this committee. It's easy to find who's on this committee, to go to conferences of local universities, to go to athletic directors. We need a major push here, because in the past, some similar things have tried to go through, and there's been a big push against it, and it was stopped. And if we don't do it and we sit on our hands, it will. We'll have to follow, not by choice, but by having it rammed down our throat.
Which makes followers who are not motivated, makes
exactly.
Followers who now go for a title that will not be fighting for a cause, you know.
Yeah. It's disheartening, but it's also exciting, because I tell you what, I'm more driven than ever to be involved and hope that we can keep it normal.
Well, I mean, you know, and that's right. And here's the thing that's been really surprising to me, two things. First of all, when there was the start of a little bit of backlash or a little bit of pushback to the ITA pushing this through, and the way that they pushed it through, maybe I need to go through it one more time so that people who haven't been listening to shows, go back, folks. Check out my website, chuckcreasy.net. You can go back to American Tennis Radio. Listen to Randy Blumenthal in late May. It was 1st of June. But he sort of spells out everything that's happened. And Lisa Stone's program as well on Monday on the Parenting Aces. But there's several things. First of all, This all started in 2012 with the NCAA tournament, 32 teams at the site. And by the way, 51-2 voted against that on the men's side to have 32 teams, 16 men, 16 women together. It was a thing that was pushed through anyway, regardless. They shouldn't have even asked the coaches. They shouldn't even, you know, had that facade or that, that falsity that mattered what the coaches thought. Secondly, 32
hey, coach,
teams.
Sorry to interrupt. Hey, they're calling my flight, Coach. I didn't mean to interrupt
okay.
you, but I've got to run and catch a flight.
Okay. Hey, Eric Hayes, can we have you back on the show here again sometime soon? We just really, really appreciate, you know, what you stand for, what you've done, and looking forward to it, and keep standing up and speaking out. You know, take care, man.
I will, Coach. Take care. Thanks for having me.
Okay. We're going to just sort of reiterate what happened with the whole process. In 2012, 32 teams, I think it was Athens. I was not in coaching at that time. 32 teams, it rained. They had a mess. The athletic directors who were there or the NCAA committee who were there just said, wow, what's going on here? The response was that, hey, listen, it's too long. We can make our format shorter. And when they brought this up, there was a tremendous pushback of 10,000 signatures against a shortened format. And with that pushback, the committee decided, let's table it. They tabled it for a year. It reared its head again this last year as the ITA sent out a letter, and then it was to be discussed at the convention. At the ITA convention in December, there was a five-hour debate about different issues, and pretty much the ITA said, we have to make something shorter, so which one are we going to do? So they got up in front of the group, put two potential compromises on the board. One was that you would play regular scoring, normal traditional scoring, but stop the sets at 5-5 for the tiebreaker and only play one set for doubles. The second choice was to play full matches, but to play no ad scoring. The first of those two was picked. 21-19 was the vote. Coaches went home feeling like, well, we've saved the tennis for somewhat here, and 21-19, okay, we can live with that for the six-month experiment. That night in closed session, they decided that 21-19 was not a mandate, so they came up with a format that jokingly people started referring to as the Bullwinkle system, which was the worst of part of those two. The no-ad scoring plus sets to five in singles and doubles to be tiebreakers to five. And they played this for 6 weeks. Many, many upsets occurred. Upsets like Elon beating Duke, nothing to be taken away from the great Elon team, but them beating Duke. We had many, I know that Indiana University took some hits, some close losses because of the no-ad. Teams like, I mean, you can go to Michigan. The coach ended up losing his job there later. Whether or not it was for that, they took some early season losses and did not perform as well as they should. The first 6 weeks, though, of the season was this experimental format. Tragically, it was not put to rest. During that time, after the 21-19 vote, we heard that it would probably be used full-time next year, regardless of what the coaches felt about it or said about it. One of the top players in the country started a Facebook site, and he ran a poll, and he got 1,348 student-athletes speaking out against it. The MDTA, the Men's Division I Tennis Association, took a poll, 65-11 coaches against the new experimental format. Most recently, the women on the women's side of things, as of Monday, on Lisa Stone's program, Lynn Loring was on there saying that there were 174 coaches have spoken out and said that we do not want this format, and we want this. Excuse me, I'm going to get this right. not that they don't want the format. They said any change should be voted on by the coaches and needs a two-thirds majority. And needless to say, with all this anyway, there was a meeting at Kalamazoo this past week, a week ago Monday, and the ITA basically said, this is it. This is the way it's going to be. Get used to it. Let's go forward. Stop trying to hang on to the past. You know, be progressive, be a futurist, and we're going to do this anyway. Basically wrong. As coercive or persuasive leadership, the only type that they are using. And with this, whether you want to call it tennis tyranny or whether you want to call it something else, it gets down to the fact very, very simply that it doesn't matter if it's a great system, in-between system, bad system. First of all, I absolutely publicly question the ITA's authority to push into the NCAA mandates or to push to the committee that this is what everybody wants. It's completely wrong, completely, and I will challenge anybody from the ITA, please come on here and debate me with this topic. The ITA is a coaches association. They do not rule college tennis. They do not supersede an athletic department or a conference or the NCAA. And they know this as well as anybody. For them to come up with what they have is completely, completely wrong and misguided, or if you want to give them the benefit of the doubt, an oversight. But it is the driving force. And now what we are attempting to do, and I'm sorry that Eric had to go, but there's two things that can be done. And the first is, yes, get if you are outraged by this, let people know. You know, write a letter to the NCAA committee, to, you know, the conferences, you know, tennis. They always have a person who's a supervisor of tennis. But also we need to do this through the conference offices. We need to do it with our players are the ones that are affected. And that's the most tragic thing. With 1,348 student-athletes only on the men's side, this men's Division I side, standing up and with this is appalling. This is appalling. We're going to go to commercial, and we'll be right back. I'm really, really glad that we were able to have Eric Hayes on there. We'll be right back. This is Chuck Creasy in American Tennis.
This is Coach J.P. Weber of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. In my 30 years experience in coaching tennis, I've never seen a better tennis training situation for children than Coach Creasy's Total Tennis Training Camps. Chuck Creasy has coached them and trained them in every arena from juniors to collegiate to professional tennis, and over 15,000 children have improved their games at his summer tennis camps. Find out more at ChuckCreasy.net. That's ChuckCreasy.net.
Creasy, we're making them in America, and we've always made them the best. We are the top entrepreneurial country in the world, and we're talking about what we need to do to really move forward once again. We have the best juniors in the world right now. It's obvious from the results at Wimbledon. Again, congratulations to, of course, Noah Rubin, and then Stefan Kozlov, I think, is doing so well. And then you have Francis Tiafoe. You have a lot of these top players who are often doing well. But with this, folks, we have a huge responsibility. We have a huge responsibility to do the next right thing, and we have the huge responsibility to try to take this talent and to try to develop. But as Eric Hayes was saying, that, you know, comfort bears no fruit. When you have a top player, he's coached a lot of the top players in his years of being at one of the top academies and in taking them around the country and around the world to play, that it's the formative years where they learn that it's not about the skill set, it's about their mindset, and it's about their heart, and it's about the work, and it's about what they have to do in the area of their development for long periods of time. And if you really, really do care from the bottom of your heart, make sure that you speak out and stand up and try to – we've got to get people to where they're inspired from the heart first. It's not doing things right as much as doing right things. We're into a situation where we're doing right things a lot because we have the systems, but we have to do right things as well. So with that, I really, really ask you that each and every one of us has our responsibility. What I think that, an interesting thing when we were talking to Eric here was that I do remember very, very well him growing up and going through being around tennis a lot and then going off to college and having it in his heart to maybe coach and to, you know, having the dream of doing that one day. I think that it would be very, very wise of us to try to promote the young people or just promote teaching and coaching for some of our young people. It's a great profession. I wanted to remind you that we do a program, the program called Small Town Tennis USA, where we are trying to get college players to go into smaller communities and to try to teach in the summertime. And with that, a reminder that we have, 72% of all the professional athletes, 72% of all professional athletes actually come from smaller towns. The other thing we have a void of is we're not getting enough coaches out there in the field. We have a lot of tennis teachers, but we don't have enough coaches. Now, the point there is that with the coaches have to be – if you go into tennis, you're either going to go into maybe resort coaching, country club coaching, or into just real coaching. And the money, of course, is into resort tennis and to country clubs. But we need coaches. We need the people who are teachers and coaches and that will really stand up and make a difference in maybe taking the tough road with kids instead of the road that just really maybe brings in a little bit more income or, but we basically just need to tell the kids we need to give them the right direction and we need to ask them to do the right things over and over and over again, whether or not it's breeding a result, immediate result. So with that, I would just say that let's try to focus on that. If you see a young man or young woman in college, they're not going to be able to play pro tennis. Get them into some of these communities where they can work with the youngsters during the summer and breed their teaching skills. A couple other things I wanted to mention. Next week we will have Coach Lawrence Klager on the show. I've got to make sure that he's free during that time, but
really, you know, one of the outstanding coaches right now out there. We can, if we get him as a guest, that'd be wonderful. I wanted to also mention that we've still got a lot more of the summer ahead of us. Again, we'll be, you know, covering some of the U.S. Open matches in the junior part. We are hoping that we can continue to see the players step up and do as well as they have. The talent is coming along. I do need to give credit to the USTA for, you know, this crop of juniors is really coming up. But the next level is the big level, and it's the level that we really need to try to encourage youngsters to pursue. I think a part of, again, it might be that we have promoted this point system where the kids are going after points instead of going after titles and going after the rivalries. Remember, the rivalries and the titles are the two most important things that kids go after, and that's the hook in the mouth and the barbs on the hook. We seem to be fishing a lot with barbless hooks in the sport of tennis. We get kids involved, but we don't help to keep them involved. Every week, I wanted to remind you, too, Lisa Stone, an outstanding program on the week coach, on the Parenting Aces program on Monday on the UR Tennis Network. On the Yellow Ball Network on Tuesday at noon is J.P. Weber's We Coach Tennis. And then every Wednesday at noon, I'll be here with American Tennis. 2 hours from right now, actually 2 o'clock Eastern time, Jason Haynes will be talking about the college connection or the collegiate connection. He always has a collegiate coach on talking about their programs, and it's fantastic. But with that, folks, we're so grateful for the chance to stand up and speak out. And I want you to understand this balance that, you know, and it gets, it's as simple as a squeaky wheel gets the oil, but if it squeaks too loud, it gets removed. We need to find those avenues where we can win the war of ideas. And it's not about forcing our ideas or your ideas down somebody's throat. It's, we need to make sure that people follow you or follow your idea by choice. And that's a critical thing. When you have to force people to follow your ideas, you will get a person who's not committed. We certainly don't want our children to ever be that way, where they feel like they're compliant without being committed and inspired. There's a tremendous difference between those. We can force a dog or a cat or any person to be compliant if we force this, and we have the power to do so. But that doesn't get the job done. That just gets them in the ballpark. We need to make sure that after compliance, we get them to the point of commitment where they've committed on their own, and then inspired enthusiasm. The word enthusiasm is extremely powerful, and we need people to believe in the cause much, much deeper than to just surface. We want to thank Eric Hayes again for being on the program, and we're going to be watching that Mercer University program. The tennis team there, what a fantastic coach, a fantastic man. And in the meantime, keep your eyes open and try to follow what's going on with college tennis. This is going to be an interesting battle. It's something that will not just go away. It is something that's going to be an ongoing battle until everybody gets on the same page, and it's not going to be out of coerciveness, or I always say tennis tyranny, that forces people onto the same page. People have to believe in their heart of hearts what's going on. They have to believe in the leadership and the message that they're trying to serve. So. Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. King James and Uncle Sam. He's got the red, white, blue, flying high on the farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his left arm. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of his USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't president. He's just made in America.
this is Coach Chuck Creasy, and reminding you that you're in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. We will see you next week on the UR Tennis Network, and go on out and help some people, help some youngsters out there in front of you to believe in the dream and then to walk it and to live it. God bless you all. See you next week.
Opinions stated by various contributors to the UR Tennis Network and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR Tennis Network. Participants are encouraged to use their own discernments and draw their own conclusions. All information, products, and services offered by the UR Tennis Network are for personal use only. The UR Tennis Network does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of information contained within the network. Any products or services provided for should be used solely for entertainment purposes. We emphasize the idea of keeping an open mind and not construing the products, services, or data as factual.